There's a, a deadly disease going around the country. It's always been here, hurting God's work more than any other thing, more than liberalism, more than Hollywood, more than communism, more than sin, open sin, more than the permissive society, more than the God is dead theology. There's a disease going around that's hurting God's work more than anything else. That disease is called in the Bible fainting. Fainting. Now, the Lord uses the word faint in the Bible, or faint-hearted, or fainting. He likens, the word is a word that has to do with weariness. Actually, when someone fainted, you know, in Bible times, they wore long flowing robes. And when they would fight, girt themselves, they'd wrap a tight girdle around themselves, and so they could run easier, so the robes, the clothing wouldn't fit so loosely, and they'd wrap that like that around them, and that way they could fight like a fella. Take off his coat, because his coat is too bunglesome, he can't fight with his coat off. Then also, they'd be sure the shoes were on tight. And when the person girt up his loins, you've heard in the Bible it says, girt up your loins. And when a person would girt up his loins, that meant he was ready to fight. And make his shoes tight, that means he's ready to fight. But when a person fainted, the word faint comes from a word which means to loosen the clothing. It likens serving God without the girdle. It likens a person, or compares it to a person serving God with his clothing loose, trying to run a 100-yard dash with an overcoat on. Or the person trying to run with his shoelaces. Did you ever try to walk somewhere and one of your shoelaces was untied? And you stepped on your shoelace and it's flapping all the time and your heel came out of your shoe as you walked. And yet you felt like you were not at the place where you could tie your shoe. And so you're handicapped. And when the Lord talks about fainting, he talks about this matter of having loose garments on or loose shoes on. It means he's not doing your best. It means not giving your all. It means having a Sunday school class and coming about 40 Sundays a year, not all the time. It means laying out of Sunday school because you got some little piddling excuse like working in the yard or working on the house or taking a weekend off or some other sorry backsliding excuse for being a halfway kind of a servant for God. That's what fainting is in the Bible. No, the fainter in the Bible is not just the one who drops out of church. The fainter in the Bible is not the one that goes back to the old life. The fainter in the Bible is not the one that goes to church on Sunday and goes back to the tavern on Monday. The fainter in the Bible is the one who has a job for God and doesn't give his all. He doesn't come to chiropractic on Thursday night. He doesn't stay home and watch television. He doesn't, he's an usher. No, he comes whenever he can. Doesn't matter too much. His job's not too important, you know. If he teaches the Sunday school class, and if he has company, he doesn't come. This kind of person that serves God when it's convenient. And God says that kind of fainting is wrong and it's sin. That's a deadly disease, hurts churches, sends folks to hell, robs God of the blessing and glory that's rightly His. By the way, this disease is also very contagious. I read for you in the book of Deuteronomy, and I ask you not to take time to turn to it, but in chapter 20 and verse 8, I read these words. And the officer shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, what man is there that is fearful or faint-hearted? Let him go and return to his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. The Israelites were coming toward the promised land. And Moses said, inspired by God, Moses said, anybody here faint-hearted? Not going to do your best? Going to sort of be a slack servant of God, a halfway kind of servant? He said, go on back home. We can win the battle better without you. He said, what you'll do is you'll make the rest of them faint. You'll discourage the rest. You'll not only take a weekend trip yourself and not go to church, you'll invite somebody else to go with you and keep them out of church too. It'll be catching. Faint-heartedness. Oh, listen to me tonight. Listen, what this old country needs is a generation of Christians who don't faint, who stay on the fire line all the time. They teach a Sunday school class. They teach it 52 weeks a year. And if they sing in the choir, they sing in the choir 52 weeks a year. And they keep on soul winning. And they never turn back. And they never quit. And they never slough off. And they never lay home because they got a 99.5 fever. They stay on the job. They're there. You superintendents know what I mean. Those of you who aren't faint-hearted yourself, you know what I mean. You got some teachers that are never gone. They're just always there. Then you got some? You never know. You got to check on them all the time. Least little thing, keep them out. They faint. And that's the kind of people that send souls to hell and rob the church of its power and rob God of the glory that's rightly his. By the way, this fainting is also sometimes fatal. In Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 18, I read these words. It says, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint. Now the Lord said, said the Amalekites came. They smote you. They smote you from the rear. You know, if I ever get smitten, I hope it's not from the rear. I want to get smitten from the front, not from the rear. I often say across the country that the reason I didn't like Yankees years ago is because they shot my great-granddaddy in the back in the Civil War. And somebody said, why in the back? I said, because he's running, you fool. That's why he's in the back. He wasn't so dumb. But I hope I never get smitten from the back. God's folks ought not to get smitten from the back. No place to run. No time to run. No time to retreat. You check Ephesians sometimes, and you'll find that God has given us the armor of the Lord to wear. He's given us a helmet. He's given us a breastplate. He's given us a shield. He's given us an armor, but nothing for the back. Why? God doesn't want his people to turn their back on the devil. God wants you to keep going. Now what happened, it says here, it says, when you were faint, the enemy smote you. Yeah, when you're faint, when you're relaxed. It's summertime. And you said, now I don't think I can teach my class all summer long. That's hypocrisy. That's foolishness. My Bible says be instant in season, out of season, always fervent in spirit, always serving the Lord. You watch it. You watch it. You lay out of your Sunday school class. You quit singing in the choir during the summertime, or just sing when you can. You know, after all, they can get somebody to take my place. Probably permanently it'd be better. My class is not too, or I'm a superintendent, but, oh, every superintendent needs about 15, 20 weeks off a year, and I'm a superintendent. You better watch out. The devil's going to smite you from the rear while you're running one of these days. That's where the casualties come. Satan knows when you're weakest, when you faint, when you're not girded up all the time. That's one reason why, to me, every Sunday's important. Every Sunday's important. They're the one important Sundays. To me, it's just important today as it was the day we had 101,000. The day we had the big day. Every Sunday's important. Every day's important. Every sermon's important. Every song's important. Every service important. Why? Because the devil's on the loose all the time and sin's running wild all the time. And Satan's trying to steal our young people all the time. And the country's going to the hell all the time. I'm trying to say we have no time to faint. Keep your loins girt all the time. Keep your shoes tied all the time. Stay in the battle all the time. Don't run the slipshod, lackadaisical sort of a way. Let the world, you know, good Lord, good devil, half in, half out, half on, half off, soft soaping kind of service for God. That's not pleasing to God Almighty. That's the fainting, and that's not what God wants us to do. That's when folks, that's when it's sometimes fatal. Satan knows we faint. There's something else. Fainting sends more folks to hell than most anything else. In 2 Corinthians, I read for you, chapter 4, I think it is. And I can find it here. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, I believe it's verse 16, if I'm not mistaken. Chapter 4, verse 16. For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4 says, if our gospel be hid, it said of them that is lost. The implication there is that fainting is what hides the gospel. Fainting is what sends souls to hell. And, by the way, fainting also destroys nations. In Jeremiah 51, verse 46, it says, and lest your heart faint, and ye fear of the rumor that shall be heard in the land. The rumor that shall come 1 year, and after that another year, shall come a rumor, and violence in the land, ruler against ruler. The Lord said, you and you faint, you don't give God all you have, your nation will be destroyed. You know, what's wrong with America? We fainted. That's why we lost the crazy Vietnam War we painted. America had no right to lose that war. The greatest nation on the face of the earth had no right to lose some little upstart North Vietnam nation. You know how we lost it? Because we fainted. We fainted. We didn't have the will to fight. Let me tell you something, brother. If we lose the will to fight, we've lost our greatness. If we lose the the will to arm and keep ourselves stronger than Soviet Russia. And whatever you think about Mr. Reagan, he's right. Detente is nauseating. trying to make up to a godless nation that doesn't believe the Bible, where Sunday school is punishable by 3 years in prison, where it's against the law to print Bibles, and where they point their finger toward God and call him an old man, and they have cartoons that where the Russian points his finger toward God and says, we've rid ourselves of all the czars of this world, and now we'll rid ourselves of you. God, that's the kind of nation we're trying to have detente with. What we ought to do is gird our loins and build the biggest navy in the world, and build the biggest air force in the world, and have the biggest stockpile of atomic bombs in the world, and have the greatest, most powerful army in the world, and have the greatest militia in the world, and say to Russia, we don't want to fight, and we don't want to have a war, but we're not afraid to. And if you cross the line anymore and try to enslave this whole world anymore, we've not lost our will to fight. Keep our clothing girded. Keep the girdle around us, and keep our shoes fastened and our shoes tied, and always be ready to serve God. That's what's wrong with the nation. And if we don't get back to patriotism and love for country, these dirty treason folks that are guilty of treason who burn our flags. And right across the street from this church one day, we saw a little hoodlum, bunch of hoodlums, take an American flag and wash a car with the American flag. You ought to be put in a penitentiary for life. They don't like it, then get out. Go somewhere, get them a red flag, a hammer and sickle. I'm trying to say, we need some old-fashioned spunk once again in our nation. We need some spunk in the pulpit. We need some spunk in the pew. We need some spunk in the White House. Well, by the way, sure we ought to keep the Panama Canal. Sure we ought to. The idea of letting a bunch of, let's everybody have a war. Oh, fool, let's have one then. A lot of things worse than war. Cowardice is worse than war. Yellow-bellidness is worse than war. A yellow spine is worse than war. No character is worse than war. Indecency is worse than war. No discipline is worse than war. No patriotism is worse than war. We ought to say, for the grace of God, if we die, we'll die to keep the old stars and fly stripes waving high. We'll die if needs be for our nation and our peace and our righteousness and our heritage. What's wrong with us? We fainted. That's what's wrong with us. We got a bunch of folks in the Supreme Court that have fainted. If you let me say this, though, I think Mr. Ford's an honest man. I think we have a president that's fainted. I think we have a Congress that's fainted. We've let these McGovernites and Umphreyites and all the rest of these parasites too long. Now, try to disarm this country and mollycoddle and pussyfoot with Soviet Russia. Where's the old backbone America used to have? Where are the young men who said, if my country needs me, I'll go? Where are the men who said, my country, right or wrong? Where is the old patriotism that said, I want to be the first to join the army and not the last? Where is the old patriotism that said, I'd rather be dead than red? I'd rather have death and lose my life and lose our freedom and lose what America's had through these years. We fainted. We've loosened our girdle. We've loosened our shoes. What are we doing? We're now one of the weakest, softest nations on the face of the earth. We fainted. Destroys nation. Now I want to talk to you for a while on how not to faint. How not to faint. I think I have as much a right as anybody here to faint. I think I'm as busy as most anybody here. I think I have a right to faint, if anybody has a right to faint. I was reading an article the other day about what flying does to your health. Just flying, what it does to your health. How it tears down some things about your metabolism and so forth. And I fly over 150,000 miles a year. About 2 years ago, I passed 2 million miles in the air. And I pastor a large church, and I preach 3.5 sermons a day. And I am president of a college and try to keep the finance bills paid and oversee the work of a high school and a grade school, and write 2 books a year, and travel several hundred thousand miles a year, and try to keep this great church going, and counsel with 135 folks average a week. I think I have a right to faint, but I've found some secrets, brother. You don't have to faint. You don't have to faint. I want to talk to you tonight. How not to faint. In the first place, we must renew the inner man. We must renew the inner man. 2 Corinthians 4:16 talks about the renewal of the inner man. Now, you renew the inner man, and it'll renew the outer man. You renew the spirit, and the spirit will renew the body. We got some of the craziest notions running around this country about how you get strength.
say, eat. You got to get plenty of rest and eat plenty of food, and you'll get strength.
Now, both of those are just wrong. They're just not right. You don't get strength by eating plenty of food. You don't get strength by getting plenty of... There was a survey taken, or a study taken, in England, made in England, not long ago, and said that folks that get more than 7 hours sleep of night live far shorter lives than folks that get less than 7 hours sleep. It's a hoax that says you got to lay in bed. Good. Now, you know, if a fellow lives to be 60 years old and sleeps 8 hours a night, he only actually lives 40 years. Now, you can spend a third of your life unconscious if you want to, but I'm not going to do it. That's dumb. That's left asleep. You don't know what you're doing. You just lay in there in a coma. Now, if you want to do it, go ahead. Not me, buddy. Oh, you say, well, the house, I mean, you got to get your rest and get your strength.
Who said?
Who said? Show me where 8 hours a night mentioned. Some lazy doctor thought that up. I didn't say all doctors are lazy. You, doctors in our church are not lazy. You ask Dr. Cal Streeter, Dr. Dennis Streeter, well, if 8 hours of sleep a night is necessary or not. Well, those fellows don't get 3 or 4 hours sleep a night themselves. I'm simply saying this thing of slumber and sleep and rest and sleep until 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. That's not what gives you strength. Here's what you do. You sleep about 10 hours some night and tell me how you feel the next day. I sleep 8 hours a night, I have a headache the rest of the day. Oh, yes, I've got to have 8 hours. Listen, I could set your clock and you go to sleep. You can sleep 1 hour. I could wake you up, you look at your clock, and think it was 8 hours, and you'll feel great all day. Or I could set your clock and you think it was and you sleep 8 hours, and I set your clock, and you wake up 2 o'clock in the morning, according to the clock. But you think you got 8 hours sleep, and you think you got 8 hours, you only got two, you'd be rested all day long. Now I'm trying to say this. God's people don't have to go around fainting all the time. And you don't have to depend upon, the fellow said, eat all your food, you gotta be strong. How strong do you feel after Thanksgiving dinner? Huh? How strong do you feel Christmas afternoon about 3 o'clock? Huh? You stick your big pot belly toward heaven. Look like one of the pyramids of Giza laying there on a bed. On the sofa. Big clodhopper sticking toward heaven. You groan and grunt and belch and burp. America's eating herself to death. Oh, you got 3 square meals a day. Who said? Go to a veterinarian. Ask him how many times he feeds your dog. Huh? Look, I could save you if you'd listen to me, and I could save you $20 a week on your grocery bill. That's not now if you'd listen to me. You don't need 3 meals a day. You don't need it. I hate to preach this right after Huckins has been singing up here behind the platform. I have no respect to that human blimp that just floated up here a while ago. But I am trying to say this. And I'm trying to say there's a way God's folks can be strong. And there's a way God's folks can be healthy. And you can laugh all you want to at me. You can criticize me all you want to. But you stuff yourself with pizza and all that kind of garbage, go ahead. Just stuff yourself with spaghetti and all that kind of garbage and spend your life drinking your coffee and drinking your pop and all the rest of it. But you know we have a tired nation that's fainted. There's a way that God's people can be strong physically and do a lot of work and not be lazy and loafing and tired and weary all the time. One thing you ought to do is quit eating so much. Quit eating so much. Quit eating so much junk. Now, the inner man. The inner man. There's a second thing you got to do to keep strong and not to faint. And that is, keep on fighting. Keep on the battle. May I read for you Judges chapter 8 and verse 4. A very important passage. Judges chapter 8 and verse 4. And Gideon came to Jordan and passed over. And the 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. Faint yet pursuing them. They were tired. They kept on working. They were tired and weary.
but they kept on fighting. They didn't stop. Being tired is no excuse. Now, you know, do you get weary of folks talking about how tired they are? There's some people, they can't go to bed tonight without reminding you they're tired. Well, honey, that's what going to bed's really all about. I'm so tired. It's been such a hard day. Well, join the 2 billion others that are tired, but shut up. Of course you're tired. Well, I'm just too tired to go another step. I bet you're not. I told my sergeant that, the paratroopers, and I kept going. Kept going. Keep on going. Keep on moving. Keep on fighting. When you get tired, go on. You know what? After a while, you'll get your second wind. I used to be a paratrooper. We had to run 10 miles a day in combat boots up and down hills on highways. 10 miles every day. You know that we'd run 3 or 4 miles, and I thought I couldn't take another step. But all of a sudden, I got my second wind. And after I got my second wind, I mean it, I believe I could run 100 miles. I don't think a thing could have stopped me. It was just like breathing or walking. Got my second wind. The same thing's true when you serve God. Get your second wind. Keep on going. Let you stay with the house. I'm tired. I get on an airplane sometime, and I want to go to sleep. Or I slap my face sometime to work. Why? It's work time, that's why. Sometimes I'll shake my head, and I'll say to the steward, open the window. She'll say, you better not open the window. She said, it caused a little trouble here at 40,000 feet. And I say, I'm tired. I'll say, splash my face with water. But work! Good night! This lazy generation. And yet, you moms. Mothers especially. God bless you, mothers. We'd have had a hard time getting here without you. But if there'd been any other way, it would have been a good idea in some cases. Oh, my precious little boy. He just works day and night. Oh, my precious little boy. Oh, won't you hush? Nobody ever worked himself to death. Nobody. Let your precious little boy work. Thank God. He has some gumption and character and decency and integrity. And we're trying here at Hiles Anderson College to raise a bunch of young men who work. But I'm tired. Work. But I'm weary. Work. But I'm faint. Work. But I'm lonely. Work. But at the back sore. Work. Work. It's like a car. The battery is generated when the motor runs, not when it's idle. And the body the same way. The body refreshes itself when character takes over. So they were fainted, and yet they pursued. They kept on going. I've watched these people that quit for a while. They hardly ever come back. For the house, could I quit my bus route for the summer? Well, some of you folks have had an 8-year summer. No, don't give your bus route up, and don't quit your class, and don't quit anything you're doing for God. Keep on pursuing. Keep on attacking. There's a third thing you do to cure the faintness, and that is don't quit your well-doing. Galatians 6:9, be ye not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. Don't quit your well-doing. If you got too much to do, you got to quit something, don't quit your well-doing. Don't go to some unconverted doctor and heed the unconverted doctor's advice says you ought to quit your Sunday school class. Nobody ever wore out working for God in the energy of the Holy Spirit. Nobody. 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 I'm simply saying, don't quit your well-doing. Listen, quitting your well-doing will wear you out more than doing your well-doing. I want to quit. I want to faint. No. Keep on doing what you're supposed to do. Keep on building that Sunday school class. Keep on building that bus route. Keep on rearing those children right. Keep on working. Keep on with your job. Don't quit your well-doing. Oh, you go to some doctor, and the doctor says, oh, you've got too much to do. And the first thing the heathen doctor says is you better quit your bus route. My Bible says you're not supposed to walk in the counsel of the ungodly. And if an unconverted doctor tells you to cut out your spiritual service, you're not supposed to obey him or listen to him. I'll quit your Sunday school class. You're going to wear yourself out. 10,000 times to die working and live loafing.
Oh, my. It's a matter of loafing. It's a matter of resting. Sometimes in the afternoon, I'll be in a motel room somewhere. I'll say, I'm going to take the afternoon off and get me some rest. What'll I do? What is there to do? There's a bowling alley, but I don't care about bowling. I mean, why in the world should I throw a ball at a bunch of sticks and pay for it? Well, I'll go play golf. Why in the world should I chase a white ball across a cow pasture and put it in a tomato can? I'll feel sorry for these preachers all across the country. Tomorrow morning, they got to go play golf to get over the nervousness of having served the Lord and preached on His peace on Sunday. Played golf like I do, you'd have to go to preach on Tuesday to get over your nervousness of the golf game on Monday. I feel sorry. Feel sorry for him. Oh, doctor, you're going to crack up. I was on an airplane flying to Atlanta, Georgia. Sit down beside a fellow. Got my Bible out. He said, you must be a minister. I said, I'm a Christian first. And he said, but I'm a pastor. He said, put it there. So am I. I said, where do you pastor? He said, Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia. I said, where you been? He said, Mayo Clinic. I said, what for? He said, checkup. I said, what'd the doctor say? So all I needed to do was rest from preaching too much. How many times you been preaching? He said, once a week. Once a week. He said, my doctor said, let the assistant pastor preach every other week because I've been preaching too much and about to crack up. Yeah, that's the kind of heathen philosophy America has tonight. Listen, you young preachers want to know the secret of success. It's a dirty four-letter word. It's work. I recall that night several years ago. Right over here across the street, diagonally across the street, they started this village boutique, a hippie joint. A bunch of idiots were hanging out over there. Open sex. Passing out literature with dirty four-letter words on the literature to young folks as they walk by, living like animals over there in that heathen place. I contacted the mayor. He tried to do something to get rid of them. He couldn't do it. And I contacted the health department. They tried to do it. Funny thing. We can have one wire stretched across this building and they'd get us for it. We have closed down for it. They come out here, boy, one little thing wrong, they close us down. Dirty bunch of communist hippies can sit over there in a filth rat infested place with cockroaches and everything else, and they can't close them down. You know why? Because these left wing Warren courts we got around America. That's why. You say, oh, like you're preaching. Well, then just go somewhere. No, the kind you'd like, they don't have it on Sunday night. Better go home. So what happened? One Sunday night, and I was preaching right here in the old building, and in walked a couple of those freaks from over here. They had on olive drab green army blankets. Came walking back to sit down right back up here. And as they walked in, they raised their arms. Looked like the Batman and Robin with their outfits dyed green. They came floating over here and their blankets and sat out there. I preached a while. You can imagine they got mad and walked out. I kept on preaching. They walked back in. I preached a while longer. They got mad and walked out. I preached a while longer. They came back in. And finally, they got up the next time to leave, and I'll give you two guesses what I said, and the first one won't count. I said, "Set sail!" You either get in or get out. If you want to come to church here, you're welcome, but you're not going to get up every time you hear something you don't like. Well, next service, 25 of them came. They're like rabbits. They multiply very rapidly. And so, 25 of them came. So, after the service, they said, I want to meet you. I went to my office, and 25 of them came in there and met me, and the chief cook and bottle fellow ran the place. He sat right in front of me. And after those folks were there, I had to spray for weeks to get the odor back to normal. And he said, now, Reverend, we're here to say that we are across the street. We want to be good neighbors. And I said, you might start by not passing out that dirty literature you've been passing out to our kids. He said, now, we want to tell you there's not going to be any trouble if you treat us right. And I said, you better hope there's no trouble anyhow. He said, why? I said, because there's 25 of you. We got 12,000 members here. And not a pacifist in the bunch.
And I said, you give us trouble. You got more trouble than you've ever had in your life. I said, why do you fellows come here? One little long-haired fellow, sitting back in the back, about that high, he jumped up, and he began to do like this. In my office. I said, what are you doing? He said, like baby. Like baby. He said, like baby. I'm telling you why we come here. I said, why? He said, because you got soul, baby. You got soul. What he means is I get them more excited about this book, as excited about this book as they can their garbage over there. There's some preachers across this area take their bathrobes off this morning and cut loose and preach a little bit and get excited and get some soul about the Bible and some soul about sinners and some soul about heaven. A lot of folks have come to hear. Well, everybody tried to close it. Health department tried to close it. Gene's restaurant over here started a campaign, tried to close it. Nobody could close that joint. One Monday morning, we're in the staff meeting over here in the chapel. I looked back and I saw the fellow, the chief fellow over here. I guess he's a fellow. He had a beard. That's all you could tell. And it looked in and motioned to me. And I walked out and I said, can I help you? And he said to me, I'm about to die. I'm about to die. He said, for several years, we've been across the street over there. We've been watching you. We've been passing out dirty literature. I've seen you helping little boys and girls and give money out of your own pocket to people. I've seen you take food baskets and give them to hungry folks while we've been trying to destroy morals. He said, Reverend, there's something going on across the street that's about to kill me. I've got to have what you have. I think with the fist I called you, didn't I? You came and won him to Christ. And the next Sunday morning, he walked the aisle with a haircut and a white shirt and pressed trousers and shine shoes and a tie and got and professed his faith and got baptized. And the next month, the hippie joint closed across the street. You know what'll change the hippie joints? The gospel of Jesus Christ. I mean, God's people that won't faint. God's folks that'll stay in the battle. Gird your loins! The devil's running wild. Tie your shoes and stay busy for God. Stay ready! Don't faint! Stay in the battle! Keep going on. And don't quit your well-doing. But you say, but how? I tell you, I'm so tired. Okay, yawn while you do your well-doing, but do it. There's a fourth way that a Christian can keep from being weary or be corrected, cured from weariness, and that is wait upon the Lord. Wait upon the Lord. I turn to that very familiar passage in Isaiah chapter 40. He giveth power to the faint. Who gives power to the faint? Huh? Had a call? No, he does. Who gives power to the faint? B12? No, he does. I get amused sometimes at these commercials on television. One little dab of Brill Cream, and all the ladies run after you. Man, if I thought it'd work like that, they said work, I'd bathe in Brill Cream. It won't work. No. I'm sorry. Now, all of the ladies, are you tired and run down? Do you feel weary in the middle of the day? Do the toils of your jobs and duties you perform wear you out by 5 o'clock in the afternoon? You just take 85 bottles of this a day and you'll feel better in a few years. My Bible says he gives power to the faint. He does. He does. He does. Little boy on a plane the other day, they're serving some ham on the plane. That crawling buzzard that they'd killed and serving on the plane. The mother looked at the little boy and said, son, you eat your food, you gotta be strong. Now, listen to me. There's a way that God's people can keep from being faint, and that's fellowship with God and waiting upon God. I'm talking about physical strength. You can't say, now lay me down to sleep at night and go to bed and take 5 minutes a day praying for a few little things and no heart in it and no lilt and no soul and no waiting on God and no time and no all-night prayer meetings and no fasting and praying and no coming to God and begging in intercessory prayer, you can't live that kind of life and expect this. Oh, but you get you an old-fashioned prayer closet and you walk with God and you spend 30 minutes a day on your knees before God and you fast one day a week and pray when you fast and you spend sometimes all night long on your face with God Almighty, and God will give you a transfusion of physical strength you've never had before. Wait upon the Lord. He giveth power to the faint. Them that have no might. He increases strength. Did you see that? He increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary. The young men shall surely fall, utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. It's been my privilege now for 20 years to know as well as anybody knows him, the great giant, Dr. John Rice. I've seen that man now in his 80s, 80 years of age. I've seen that man across this country preach. How he does it, I do not know. I've seen him work all afternoon and then be so weary, but take some time with God. I recall one day we were in Maryland. Bruce Johnson, where are you? You were there that night. Remember that night I had to slap him? You didn't see me slap him, but you know that night he didn't know where he was? You were at Maryland, Riverdale. We were in the hotel there. Dr. Rice had told us to come by and get him at 6 o'clock in the morning. But he took a nap in the afternoon. And he woke up. It was dark. It was wintertime. It was dark when he woke up. And he didn't show up at 10 after 6. Bruce was going to drive us to the church where he was going to preach and then I was going to preach. And so, time came, we waited and waited, and Dr. Rice is never late for anything. In fact, if you're 10 seconds late, boy, he won't speak to you for 15 years. And he hates a fellow to be late. But he was 10 minutes late. Well, I knew something's wrong. Did I knock on his door, did you? I knocked on his door. And he came to the door in his pajamas. 35 minutes in preaching time, in his pajamas. He'd taken a nap and it had gotten dark. And he thought it was in the morning. He said, oh, I got to catch the plane. He said, I'm ready. In 10 minutes, he is all packed, dressed, shaved, ready to go. Compare that with some of you ladies. But 10 minutes, he came and got in the car. He said, hurry, we've got to make it to the airport. I said, Dr. Rice, we're not going to the airport. We're going to church. Yeah. Now, you don't have church 6 o'clock in the morning. You've got to go to the airport. I said, Dr. Rice, you've got to preach in 30 minutes. He said, yeah, sure. You don't preach this time of the morning. I said, Dr. Rice, you've got to. And he said, he laughed. He thought I was kidding him. Sometimes I kid. You've never heard me, but sometimes I do. And so I said, Dr. Rice, you've got to preach. We got to church. We got out of the car. Dr. Rice said, let's go to the airport. I said, Dr. Rice, it's time for church. He said, no. He said, it's 6:30. He said, Dad, the plane leaves 7:15. I took him back in the Sunday school room. I said, Dr. Rice, I hate to do what I'm about to do. But you've got to preach in 15 minutes. And if you don't get back with it, you're not going to be able to preach. I said, you're going to be checking your bag in the pulpit up there. I said, you guys, and I said, now, I don't want to do this. I hope you'll forgive me, but I've got to. I said, I'm going to slap you and try to wake you up. Little old Dr. Jack Hyle looked up at Dr. John Rice and slapped him across like that. You know what he said? He looked at me and he said, thanks. I needed that. He said, give me a few minutes. And that old body, weary through many years of toil and scarred because of many battles, it went back in the study and got on its face before God a little while. He came out within 10 or 15 minutes during the song service. He walked out, stood up there and preached with all the strength of a 25-year-old young college preacher and all the power of a bit of Sunday and blessed that great crowd of people. I've seen it time and time again. And I've felt it time and time again. I know what I'm talking about. There is physical strength. If you'll wait upon the Lord, learn to walk with Him and wait on Him. God! I stood 26 years ago, the 13th of this month, before my father's casket, and I looked down in his face and I thought I'd die. And all of a sudden I felt a hand reach out and grab my left arm.
I looked around and I see who was holding me so tightly, and I couldn't see anybody. And I said, who touched my arm? And nobody was even on that side of me. And I felt that hand gripping me. And I said, oh my God, that's the hand of God. I know what I'm talking about. I felt that hand over and over and over again, just as real as if you reached up and touched your hand on my shoulder when I've waited on God and gone before God and pleaded with God and begged God. There is energy, physical energy. There is power, physical power. There is strength, physical strength. When God's people learn where the source of all energy really is, they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Wait upon the Lord. I'm not saying you ought to discount all rules of health. But I am saying for you moms and dads to be concerned about your boy when he only gets 5 hours sleep a night, or your girl only gets 5 hours sleep a night, and then stuff him with pizza during the daytime, that's tomfoolery. Half you ladies ought to go home tonight, 90% of you, and clean out your kitchen. Clean out your cupboard. Get all the junk out of it. You get all that spaghetti and noodles and make paste out of them for scrapbooks. All that macaroni and noodles and bugles, Cheez-Its, Fritos, trumpets, saxophone, garbage, candy bars, chocolate, almond bars. You ought to go throw them in a garbage can, go buy a big bag of grapes, some oranges or apples. My kids are turning up their noses at oranges or apples. Yeah, I know. That's because you gave them Coca-Cola when they were 6 months old and laughed and laughed and laughed while you rotted their teeth and ate out their stomach. Sit still. Some of you ladies are going to come down to this altar and look at your husband dies a premature death and cry and carry, oh, I loved you, I loved you, I loved you. How come you killed him with the kitchen stove then? They'll try you for murder. No joke. Fed him much of greasy garbage all his life. Came home at night and he had Mazzaroni pizza and Cockalucci pizza the next night and lasagna the next night and enchiladas the next night and tacos the next night and tortillas the next night and you wash it all down, baptize it with Pepsi Cola hits the spot for 12 ounces, your stomach, it'll rot, and then you'll be an early old sot, and then wash it down with that kind of garbage. Whatever happened to orange juice? Whatever happened to apples and oranges? Whatever happened to spinach? Whatever happened to turnip greens and carrots? Whatever happened to grapes? Whatever happened to peaches and pears? Whatever happened to food that God made? I'm saying, for you to say, oh, get your sleep. You know what? Get dragging in the morning. Did you ever stop thinking? Somebody ought to take a movie of your table in the morning. Get your ass. Some old gal looks through bleary eyes. Looks like a zebra because her mascara's dripped during the night. Got a greasy old house coat on. Looks across the table and says, you boys don't get your ass, you're not going to have any energy for the day. That's not the way you get energy. Wait upon God!
God. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not weary. They shall walk and not faint. Teach me, Lord. Teach me, Lord, to wait. Strength. Physical strength. And waiting upon God. Some of you fellows, unload that truck you got on the front of your body. Stick your finger down your throat and lose it all. Unload it! Slave to your appetite. Smell that chocolate pie. I'd hate to think I was a slave to a piece of pie. Allah, Master! Every once in a while, I happen to like banana pudding. I love it! Love it! I love it. If I were to eat myself to death, that's the way I'm going to eat myself to death. Every once in a while when I'm in a cafeteria in the country, I just buy me a big old helping of banana pudding and stick it on my tray and leave it there. Leave it! Why? I just look at it and say, buddy, you might think you're pretty good. And you look mighty good. That meringue looks mighty good. And that banana looks mighty good. And that vanilla flavoring, it looks mighty good. But you're not going to conquer me, buddy. You found one fella you can't conquer. And I'll eat you if I want to. And if I don't want to, I won't eat you. Now you just sit there and have some waitress come by and put you in the garbage. You have found a fella you've met your match tonight. Gotta have your strength. Gotta have your strength. So go down to McDonald's and get it. They that wait upon a Big Mac shall renew their strength. They shall mount up their wings with fish burgers. They shall eat french fries and not be weary. We're about the sorriest, dumbest bunch of folks in the world. Right here in my hand, I hold the secret to energy and strength and zeal and power and physical strength right here in my hand. And you'll get more physical strength waiting on God in an hour of prayer meeting and fasting someday and not eating a bite. And you will, how do you fast a whole day? You don't eat for a day, stupid. That's how you do it. Wait upon the Lord. Wait upon Him. Wait upon Him. Sometimes I get physically weary. When I get real, real weary and worn out, I spend a couple of hours alone with God and don't eat a bite for a day. That's the way you get strength. I'm not against food. For it. I love it. But I'm not going to ruin my life and my health and my chance to serve God and the strength that I want to have by being a slave to my stomach. And a bunch of sweet-smelling aromas are not going to conquer me. I love Mexican food. Boy, back when I was in Texas and before I learned how to have real physical strength, man, I used to go to El Phoenix and El Chico and El Garbageo and just gorge on that junk. And I can recall, I used to drink milk with it. Well, I drank milk with it because I wanted a wolf and a lamb to lie down together. I wanted to keep them getting, and I'd go home and toss and tumble all night long and burp and belch and everything else and big old stomach hanging out, and I'd get up and preach on Sunday, wonder why I was tired. There's another thing that'll give you strength, keep you from fainting, and that's regular church attendance. Regular church attendance. Psalm 84, verse 2 says, my soul fainteth for thy courts, O Lord. You know I love this place right here. Amen. I love it. So what do you for the house? What do you do for relaxation? I'm relaxed right now. For the night after a hard day, Dr. Streeter came over and gave me an adjustment. Cracked my back and
And everything that was out of place, he put in place. Everything that was in place, he put out of place. And I said, Doc, before you leave, take my blood pressure. Now, bear in mind, that's the blood pressure a fellow hadn't had a day off in 9 years. That's the blood pressure a fellow hadn't had a vacation in 9 years. That's the blood pressure of a fellow that works at least 18 hours every, average 18 hours work every day. And cares about as much mental responsibility as most anybody. I want to see what it was. He said, why? Because I was a little concerned about it. He took my blood pressure and he said, it's perfect. 138 over 80. It's perfect. I bet your quarter if you took it. No, I bet your quarter's wrong to bet a quarter. I bet you a nickel. That if he took it right now, it'd be about 138 over 80. Know why? Because I'm relaxed. What are you doing? I'm getting my generator power energy. You ever get in the car at night and you went, turn the lights on, and they just barely shine. Now, as a kid, you pushed your car down a hill in a case like that because you had standard transmission, and you push it down a hill. You couldn't crank it, and push down a hill, and you put it, you get halfway down the hill, and you put it in second, usually you put it in second, and then push on the clutch, and then let the clutch out all of a sudden, and the car would start. If it didn't start, then you push the car back up the hill so you could push the car back down the hill again. But now, you know what I mean. You stop that car immediately, and it'll go again. But you let take that car on a trip, and you run it good and fast, and you gun that motor for a while, and what does it do? Huh? It generates it, doesn't it? After a while, your lights will shine brightly. And the next time, you can start the car. Same thing's true with the body. Regular church attendance will give you energy, strength. There's something about this place that will give you strength. A lot of you feel better. You'll feel better physically when you leave tonight than you did when you came. I will. So, how do you ever get tired? Yeah. Preaching? Never. Never. What makes you tired? Oh. Sometimes counseling makes me a little tired. Sometimes business makes me a little tired. But not preaching. How else can you keep from losing your strength? And how else can you keep from fainting? Keep on praying. Luke 18:1. Men ought always to pray and not to faint. Keep on praying. Just keep on praying. Tap the source of God's eternal power and God's strength for your life and your body. Keep on praying. The average person right in this room doesn't pray 5 minutes a day. Not 5 minutes a day. Average fundamental Christian in this room, average preacher in America doesn't pray 5 minutes a day. Wonders why he's so weak. I gotta join a handball team because I'm losing my strength. Won't you try praying, waiting on God? I'm not against handball. I'm not against tennis. I used to play it, but I couldn't stand the racket and I quit. Oh, that's terrible.